Hello, I'm Elizabeth, an obsessive backyard gardener who might be able to offer you a couple of tips.
And I'm Keith, a landscape consultant, and I'm also passionate about gardening.
The one thing we both have in common is
muddy boots.
It's Q&A time once again. We have another great variety of questions this week, which include kikuyu and nutgrass issues, working with clay soil, garden product storage, perennial planting, cherry trees, crop rotation and more. We've had a great question from one listener who wants to know what Keith does when he's not chatting with me about gardening. Let's get started with question number one, Keith. This one is from our wonderful note taker, Georgina. And she says, when using products where the mixture needs to be diluted, is it okay to store the leftover spray in the sprayer, or does it need to be made up each time? For example, if I have leftover mixture of Echo Neem and Echo Oil, will it keep as is, or is it best to make a fresh mix each time? The same goes for Yates Rose Shield, Keith.
Yeah, the Rose Shield might settle back into a lumpy powder like an insoluble form.
A bit mess.
But if I tend to leave my products in a container. So at home, I've got a container that's got Eco Neem and Eco Oil all mixed in it, because that's the thing that I'm using most of the time and spraying for passion fruit, vine, you know, mongrels and aphids and all sorts, caterpillars and all sorts. So just doing that. So I have that there, sitting there continually. But the first thing I do with that is I give it a good shake. Make sure that all those soluble
ingredients
are all mixed through the actual water, and then go and spray. Where you have sprays like Bordeaux sprays, that can become problematic. That can actually settle down, and if it's not agitated properly, create a bit of a problem. What I suggest that you do in those sorts of situations is after you've mixed up the spray in the product into the water, give it all a good shake and mix it up, I suggest you put in a couple of drops of dishwashing detergent in there. And what that does is it makes the water wetter.
Okay.
All right? Yeah. So it reduces the surface temperature of the water, and it also reduces the surface temperature of the water with the ingredients in it.
Okay.
So by doing that, you should be able to not have any problems with those
things if they've been sitting.
Yeah, becoming a paste again, basically, not going through the nozzles.
Great.
Yeah.
Okay, our next question is from Emma. We have two large box elder trees, which are the main established trees in our backyard and provide great shade in summer. I've read that these trees are considered invasive and have noticed that one of them drops seeds which then sprout seedlings. Should we consider removing them and replacing with another tree? We are in Ballarat, Victoria.
Look, the problem with the box elder, and that is Acer nugando, is the actual name for it. It's a weedy species. But the fact that it provides you with shade and a nice environment, I would tend to overlook those problems of it being a weedy species. If you see the actual seeds germinating in the garden or somewhere, go and pull them out.
Yeah.
It's more beneficial to have that tree in your garden than to remove it and replace it with something else. Because if you do that and you replace it and you put something else in, you're then going to be planting for someone else to enjoy that shade.
Yeah, exactly. It takes forever.
The thing about box elders, they only live 60 to 80 years anyway. So you should have enjoyed your garden, you know, well and truly before it becomes problematic. So just be curative. And if you see the seeds germinate, you know what they look like. Remove them.
Yep.
But enjoy the box elder for what it gives you in the garden and the environment.
Exactly. Now we have a question from Amanda. I'm based in South Gippsland on a small acreage, and my property has heavy clay soil that is very compacted. I really want to plant an orchard on the property and plan to make lots of amendments to the soil when planting. But my concern is with the clay being so compacted that eventually the trees will become root-bound as they grow. Is this a valid concern, or am I overthinking it?
No, look, you're not overthinking it. And what I would suggest to do is you get yourself an FD Ryan broad fork, either a 7-tine or a 5-tine, depending on your capabilities. A 5-tine would be an absolute ripper. So by getting that into the soil, and you might have to wait until we get into the cooler months where we're getting a little bit of rain and getting moisture working its way down through that soil to start to use that broad fork in its most effective manner. you should never really be thinking about bringing in topsoil or anything else like that. You work with what you've got, and you can do that in a number of ways. If you've got a clay soil, I'd suggest you do that very, very simple test, and that is to get a sample of that clay soil, mix it with water, put it in a jar, give it a good shake up until that clay has, you know,
settled,
and count to see how long it takes for that water to become from cloudy to clear. And if it takes a long time, that is, it might take a day or 2 days before it starts to settle, then you can use gypsum to modify that soil, and you can get a liquid gypsum now. Eco produce a liquid gypsum which you just literally hose on, spray on, and it'll work its way down through the soil and help to break that up. But if the water the water becomes clear very, very quickly, then gypsum's not going to work. So therefore, you need to put amendments in. And I was just suggesting things using the broad fork, break the soil up as much as you can with using the broad fork, and then get compost, humates, all those sorts of things down into the soil. And when it comes time for you to plant your orchard through, to do those sort of things, then use something like Myco Gold in the bottom of the hole, because if you do that, those spores will attach themselves to the root system and they'll go where the roots can't go.
Yes.
There's a great little podcast, I think, that we're having on Myco Gold with Tim Lest from BioStim, and he explains the whole process, what that is. That way you're working smarter, not harder.
Fabulous, fabulous solutions there. Now, Emma would like to know what Keith actually does other than helpful Instagram videos and talking on Muddy Boots. What does a landscape consultant do, Keith?
Well, anything to do with outdoors is what the landscape consultant has, you know, to do. I mean, I can do consulting work. I can walk around your garden and explain what to do, how to treat plants, where I see that, you know, you might need to be adding something to the soil to fix it up. I can literally do all that. Or I can do a design, a full garden design. That's what a landscape consultant also does. So where you have an architect design and give you a plan for a builder to build your house, the landscape consultant does the same thing for a garden. I can design a garden for you so that then you can either work with a landscaper or you can go ahead and do it yourself because the specifications on the plan are all there to tell you how it all works. So that's the things I do. So anything from design, anything that's out in the garden, whether it be a pergola, whether it be a fire pit, a pool, decking, children's playground, anything. These are all the things that a landscape consultant does, and he does that from the brief that he gets from the client. He asks as many questions, or he asks the client to provide a brief, you know, of all the things that they want to have in their garden, the sorts of plants that they like. And a very simple way of doing that to provide a brief is to use Pinterest. Yes. And I just, I love the look of this garden. I love the look of that plant. Yeah. I love the look of, and just put all that together. And then I read that, interpret that, and I can do a design for you, for the garden. So a landscape consultant does lots and lots of things. It's can be anything from having a talk to you about your garden, recommendations, or doing a full design.
You tend to do more design. Well, I think you tend to do more designs than do the consultations, or am I, you, I just not?
No, that's true. That's true. I mean, I went and did a, for instance, I went and did a consultation last week, for instance. About his garden and the sorts of things that he should be doing.
Right.
But from that, explaining how things work, he's decided that it would be far better to get a design done, because then he can give that to a landscaper who then doesn't need to interpret anything other than what's on that plan. The specifications are there, the plants are there, the quantity of plants are there, so there's no mucking around. You know, it's a easy way of doing it. So, yeah, from consultations, it generally turns out.
Consultations leads to design, pretty much, because people go, oh, God, I can't do it myself. You've got to do it for me. Fantastic.
So there you go.
Hopefully Emma's clear on that one now. It's Charlotte's turn now. What perennials will shine and give joy and interest on the south side of a house? Maybe something a bit special. Instead of Japanese anemone and hosta, of which there are plenty already in the garden.
Mm-hmm. Okay, there's lots and lots of things. For instance, there's a beautiful ground cover plant called Ajuga reptans, and then there's lots of subspecies of that. So you can get burgundy-coloured forms of burgundy-coloured leaves that have beautiful spikes of pink flowers. So Ajuga is a great one. If you want to go for a contrast in foliage, there's a plant called Ligularia reniformis, which is actually the tractor seat plant. So if you know what the seat of an old Massey Ferguson tractor looks like,
this is what that leaf looks like.
Yeah, yeah. So it's called a tractor seat plant. And it's a beautiful contrast plant to put in amongst those other sorts of plants that you're already talking about. Anemones, you've already mentioned, they are a great plant, but you put a big foliage plant next to it, such as the tractor seed plant, and bang, it looks absolutely fantastic. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, there is an evergreen hosta, which is the Chatham Island forget-me-not, which has got a beautiful, big, glossy green leaf with beautiful margins running all the way through it. And then it has this great big head, and I'm talking about a big head of beautiful forget-me-not type flowers, so pink and white flowers that come up through the centre of it.
Sounds beautiful.
And that is evergreen, so it doesn't die down like the normal sorts of hostas. Mm-hmm. So you've got that there all the time. And then you've got plants like Arthropodium serratum, which is the New Zealand Renga Renga lily. That's got beautiful big strap-like leaves and then white sprays of flowers that come up through the centre of it. So there's some good contrast plants that we're getting through that. You can use things like sedum. Will also grow beautifully on the southern side of a house.
Sedum.
Munstead Red is a beautiful one, or Martinii is another one.
Yep.
Then, of course, you want to go for a little bit of colour. You can go into the clivias. So not just the old common clivia with the orange forms. There's now that are getting into the red colours, yellow colours, and then into almost white colours.
Yes.
And they've got this beautiful strap-like foliage and these flowers that will just light up the whole cider thing. And then you want to go for something else, you could look at things like primulas will also grow in that shady little area. And there's a plant called Velphamia bracteata. And that is another plant that looks like a little bit like, has a flower a little bit like red hot pokers, but in a beautiful pink form. Ooh. But it is deciduous. Okay. So you've got to sort of remember all that. So
it's got some
just
gorgeous,
a few. There's
gorgeous.
Some,
yeah. I'm picturing some gorgeous plants there. They sound fantastic. Hopefully Charlotte can really improve her garden with those fantastic suggestions. Now, she's got a second question as well, and that is, can asters be pinched or cut back earlier in season as they tend to grow quite tall and flop all over everything else? I've tied string around most but would rather they stayed shorter.
Yeah, you can't determine what the size of the plant is going to be unless they've got a hybridised form of it. So what I would suggest you do is you remove the spent flowers that are on it, and then rather than having to tie that plant up, crowd it. So get some other plants in and around it of the same sort of heights. So you could go for plants like salvias, for instance, that you can plant in around that aster that will come up and will force the aster up through the centre of it. So work on those sorts of ideas rather than trying to make a plant do what it's not meant to do.
Yes.
So that's a great thing. So plants like Salvia mystic spires, which is going to flower for months and months and months, or even the Mexican sage, which is going to give you a different coloured foliage and different coloured leaf structure. And then, of course, you've got plants like the agastache. There's some beautiful agastaches that I think are just garden worthy that will work off those. There's pink fortune, so you could put the pink with the aster, and you get this lovely contrast.
Beautiful.
So and then of course there's achilleas that they'll also grow and help to push those plants up.
Yep.
So don't think about controlling it. Get other plants to control it.
Go with it.
Yeah.
Go with it. Okay. Question next is from Scott. I have a cherry tree in my backyard, which was here when we bought our house, so I have no idea what variety it is. It produces some fruit, but not much. Do I need a second tree for it to cross-pollinate with, and if so, how would I work out which variety? I also have a pear that is in the same situation.
Okay. With your cherries, you need a cross-pollinator, except if you get a variety called Stella. Stella is self-pollinating, but you really should be getting another cherry of some sort and another pear, because they require those pollinators. So There's a particular cherry called Lapin, which is an early fruiting one, and it has got a more of a pinky-coloured cherry on it than a dark red form. Mm. But it'll increase the production of what you've got. So two of something will give you a much greater yield of your actual fruit trees.
Yep.
The pear, as I said, that contains that requires a pollinator, and the most common variety, of course, is Packham's Triumph. So you need to sort of have a look at what you've got, and if it's produced any fruit, well, it'll give you an indicator of what it is. But if you haven't got any fruit on, try a Packham's Triumph, because that will then give you that common pollinator of all those things. Another variety that you could use is called Josephine or Winter Nellis. There are another couple of forms that you need for that crop cross pollination.
Fantastic. Okay, Scott has another question,
mm-hmm.
and that is, I have heard of people using crop rotation for vegetables, but should I also be practicing that if I am growing annual cut flowers? Does it matter as much?
Well, crop rotation is generally done for crops, mm. And the reason for that is that those crops may attract certain pest and disease within the soil. Mm. But if you're using annuals, then that's not so much a problem, because if you're going to be using annuals, you're probably going to be using the same species of annuals on a regular basis. So what you need to do then is just to make sure that the soil is perfectly healthy. So get some good organic fertilizers into that soil as well. Get some rock dust, because the rock dust will help build up the soil's Brix level, the sugar content in the plants, and pest and disease can't break down plants with high sugar levels. They'll go somewhere else. It's just too difficult for them to eat, basically.
Okay.
So you need things like humates and composts to sort of add to the soil. Mm-hmm. And by doing that, you're going to get a greater return on the plants that you're actually putting, you're growing in that, whether it be annuals or vegetables or whatever.
Yep.
It's just a win-win situation.
Okay, there you go, Scott. Yeah. Now for a question from Anna. We are on a farm in Warwick in southeast Queensland. We have a square space, which is 4x4 metres, of kikuyu lawn surrounded on three sides by house, garage, water tank and garden beds. It is a nightmare to maintain, as we keep potted plants in this area and it is difficult to mow the small space. I am trying to limit use of poisonous herbicides as much as possible, but it's a kikuyu or kikuyu?
No, kikuyu.
Kikuyu is a constant challenge that I'm struggling to stay on top of. Oh, she's also saying, I am looking to create a little area for seating and plant pots and would like to replace the kikuyu lawn with something easier to maintain, like gravel, deco or slabs. How can I create this, and what are the best ways to remove lawn and prevent it from coming back? Do I need to remove some soil, or can I put gravel directly on top? Is deco a sensible option? How thick do I need the layer to be? Do I need to compact it? She's got lots of questions.
Mm.
How do I stop weeds and kikuyu encroaching, and would you recommend weed gunnel as a bottom layer? We are on black soil with some movement when we get rain. There you go, mm. Keith, go.
Goodness gracious. Well, kikuyu is a stoloniferous grass. That is, it grows across the top of the surface. And if you break a piece off and leave a little piece there, a new plant's going to come. So you really need to knock the grass on the head. Mm. So I would suggest that if you are worried about adding poisons to your soil, then use Eco Slasher. Now, that is a perfectly 100% organic herbicide. It's made from the oils of a pelargonium plant. And if you, as long as you follow the instructions explicitly laid down, you will kill that kikuyu off. So what I would suggest you do then is you spray it over, kill the grass off, wait to see if there's any new growth coming up, and spray that again. And then get a lawnmower if you can, and cut the grass down as low as you can each time, removing all that clippings and bin it or get rid of it somehow, and cut it down as low as you can possibly get it onto the surface. And then I would suggest that you go for something like weed gunnel. Put the weed gunnel over the top of that. And the weed gunnel is also a certified organic additive that lasts 7 years over the top of that soil before it starts to break down. But in the 7 year period, it's done its job. It's killed the weed seeds that might be lying dormant in that soil profile somewhere. So that's fine. And then over the top of that, you can then just simply put your any medium you like over it, whether you want to go for deco or for crushed rock or bark.
What is deco?
That's a particular product that they have up in
Queensland.
Queensland, yeah. It's
or gravel, or
yeah, it's a form of aggregate.
Okay.
Basically. So you could put pavers over the top of that as well, but make sure that your surface is nice and level and smooth. And that's where I'm sort of thinking that the best thing you do is actually put an aggregate down, because then you can level it off accordingly. And then on top of that, then you can put your pots and your chairs and all the rest of things, and you make yourself a lovely open space. So I think that would work out really, really well for you.
The low maintenance it'll be.
Yep.
Okay. Fantastic. We've got our last question now from Christy. 2 years ago, we moved into a new rental property that had been freshly landscaped. We were told that before that, the garden had been very overgrown. We then discovered that the garden was full of weeds, which took a significant amount of manual weeding and the use of poison out of sheer desperation, and that resulted in the loss of many of the plants. We finally thought we were on top of things, so started to replant. Fast forward to this summer and the heavy rains, and the nut grass has survived and is everywhere. Is there anything I can do about it? It is a large garden and I don't want to start poisoning again.
Yeah, well, just like the last question we had there, I think the easiest solution is going to be using Eco/ according to the specifications. And I can't stipulate that enough. You've got to read the instructions and do it according to those instructions. And then I would be thinking about putting down the weed gunnel. And if you're going to put the weed gunnel down, you could use pins to lock it and hold it in place. Another alternative might be if you want to use newspaper or cardboard. But then you're going to have to put something on top of it, and you really should do, if you're going to use weed gunnel anyway, put a mulch over the top of it, that you can get easily and readily and cheaply. So, anything like that.
Okay. There you go, Christy. Good luck. We have come to the end of another session of great questions. They were fantastic. Thank you. Please keep sending them in. We love them, as you know. Now it's time for our lucky prize winner. This time, the fabulous prize from the Plant Runner goes to Christy, who's having, obviously, as we know, a real battle with nut grass. We'll be in contact with you very shortly, Christy. And many thanks to the Plant Runner for providing a monthly Q&A prize. Do check out their fabulous products at theplantrunner.com. Thank you for listening to Muddy Boots. For more information on today's podcast, please go to muddyboots.net.au, and happy gardening.